Can we start? Yes, no? Yeah, good to go. Well, good afternoon, everyone. And first, thank you for coming to the session. It's probably the last session of the day, right? You had a long day. I think you had, what, about 10 sessions, something like that. I hope you're enjoying our wonderful Seattle weather. When I heard that Build is going to be here in Seattle, I was like, why did they decide to do it in Seattle, not somewhere warmer, like, you know, like LA, for example, which we do every year. And but there is something, I think, but afterwards, after I think about this, I think there is something really great about having you guys here on campus and really kind of having you around our development and production teams and marketing and kind of really see how we do our day-to-day work and experience what we live with every day and why we have high capacity of work because we can't sit outside or do anything else. So there is something good and there is something bad about it. So again, welcome to our campus. One of the things that I'm super passionate about is really the level of integration that we have with between Xbox, the set of Xbox services, and Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 that was announced. And what we're going to be talking about today is really how do we take those set of services and integrate them to both of those platforms? Or really, what are those set of experiences and scenarios that we have in mind when we build the Xbox Live set of services both into Windows 8 as well as into Windows Phone and obviously into the console. So my name is Avi Ben-Menachem. I'm the lead for the Xbox on Windows components, Smart Glass, the Xbox Games app, and the Xbox Developer Platform app. And with me, John Bruno, who's the lead for the Xbox services that we consume on the different platforms. And together, we're going to really talk to you about what are those set of scenarios that we have in mind and the experience that we have in mind when we think about taking Xbox Live to multiple devices. So why should we care about it, or why is it innovative, or why do we even spend time talking to you about this stuff? So, we could play games on multiple devices for years now, right? But why does it matter now, and why does it matter to our consumers or to our users? And I think that first and foremost is that the fact that there is, you know, an incredible proliferation of devices, right? Yes, we had PCs in the past, we had consoles in the past, but it's not a console-centric world anymore, or it's not even a PC-centric world anymore, right? I'm a PC gamer for years, and suddenly I see that I'm consuming more and more of my gaming and entertainment on other devices, right? Whether it's, you know, phone form factors or different slate form factors or the big screen with, you know, the additional entertainment and gaming that we're putting into the console. And when we think about kind of that proliferation of devices, I think that pretty soon we're going to run out of inches, right? We have everything from 3-inch devices all the way to, what, 82-inch devices and pretty much everywhere, everything in between, right? So pretty much we're going to run out of those kind of inches form factors or minis or megas. And really the fact is that our users expect to have their experience on all of those devices, right? I don't expect to play a game just on one device and then to forget about it when I move to my either big screen or to my slate form factor or to my PC form factor. We all expected that when we open a new device, whether it's a phone or whether it's a PC or a console, there is some way for me to consume this entertainment. There is some app store, there is some way for me to get my Angry Birds or Fruit Ninja or whatever, and there is some way for me to consume it, right? We all kind of came to expect it as a constant. It's something that, you know, the sun shines in, you know, in the morning and sets in the evening, and that's kind of what we came to expect from app stores. They're there, and all the games that I like to consume are everywhere, right? And then it kind of leads us to the next question is, how do we make that experience better, right? We all bought a game on more than one device, and we're super pissed that our progress didn't carry over, right? Or that I couldn't collaborate with friends that's on a different device, right? There are some of those games and experiences that actually implemented very, very well. You know, Word Dement is one, Words with Friend is another. It's like magic, right? To any device that I go, anything with a CPU in it, I can play with other people on other devices, on other platforms. Whether they're same screen experiences or or similar screen experiences, I can accommodate that, right? I can accomplish either a multiplayer type scenarios or a play, pause, resume type scenarios, but it just works. So when we think about it in Xbox Live, we think about it kind of under the vision of create seamless entertainment experience by connecting multiple screens that are available anytime and anywhere, right? It's a pretty big statement. And when we think about it, we basically thought about how do we actually distill that to the real set of experiences and scenarios that are actionable to developers, that are actionable to users, and what are really those set of scenarios that our users will care about. And after a lot of debate, and John can tell you about that, there's a lot of blood there, we came out with really what we think is the core four scenarios. There are obviously more, but these are the core ones that we'd like to think as most representative of what we think when we say cross-screen experiences. Everything from the standard play, pause, resume, right? I expect my context and my progress to carry over with me, right? It makes sense that as long as my game design allows that, I can start a game on one device and continue it on another, right? Whether it's a phone or a PC or a console, as long as the game designs allow for it, it should be there. You know, multiplayer, right? We've done it for years, but now we start to think about what does it mean to do it cross screens? Does it work for all games? Of course not, right? But enabling those core set of scenarios is super important when we think about the types of games that our users play today, how they consume it, the mobility of the users, and really, again, the proliferation of devices. Companion games is kind of, I'd like to think about it as the new breed of games that we can see slowly emerging where you have main game IP, but they have some companion games, so those are games that actually have some discernible gameplay, but still somehow contribute to this bigger IP or franchise. Some examples include, for example, Fable 3 and Fable Golf, right? Two completely separate games. I can play them on separate screens, but the game design allows for some shared progress or some shared achievements in the overall franchise. SmartGlass is one of the things that we were super excited about announcing this year. For us as Microsoft, that was probably one of the most groundbreaking experiences that we've implemented across the Xbox 360, Windows Phone, and Windows 8. When we started to think about how do we make the second screen experience better, and how do we create those augmented experiences that actually going to make the main game better, we thought about, hey, you know what? And there were some thoughts in Microsoft about, hey, we can create a device that's going to be this, you know, second screen device that you can use to kind of augment your experience on the main screen. But then kind of we thought, hey, you know what? We already have this device in hand, right? It's our slates. It's our phones. You already have the best second screen experience. And everyone already has it in Spock. And it's just a matter of what scenarios we enable and how do we really build the right technologies, platforms, development tools that enables such scenarios. And after we announced it in E3, and since we announced it in E3, we've done a lot of work really to kind of build the right platform, development tools, and clients that light up those scenarios. How many of you actually played with SmartGlass and seen it in work? So if you have a 360 console at home, and you have any Windows device, or Android device for that matter right now, all you have to do is just launch Xbox Music, and see the type of experiences that you can consume, or video. There are also new games that are starting to kind of come out that has those second screen experience or SmartGlass experience. Forza is one, Dance Central 3 is another, and there are a couple more that are in the pike, like Halo and so on. But when we think about those scenarios, that's kind of the key for the core four ones that we really wanted to focus on and wanted to make sure that our services and tools and experiences really kind of help achieve and implement those scenarios. So when we think about play, pause, resume, and I'll talk a little bit about each one of those scenarios. When we think about play, pause, resume, it's all about how do I keep the user engaged with my IP across screens, right? And again, this is maybe one of the more trivial scenarios, but I like to play games on my phone, and I like to play them on my slate, and I like to play them on my console, right? And today, there is no easy way unless the developer decides to build it in his own, you know, its own way and build his own backend and infrastructure, really for games to carry over state. right? In a structured way. So one example is, you know, I'm playing, I don't know, Plants vs. Zombies on my phone, and I play it on the PC and I play it on the console. Each game is actually a different game, right? It's not the same implementation. It's completely different, right? The phone one is a game that is designed for 3-inch screens, right, with touch and single touch points. While the console one is a completely different title. It's actually built for 10-foot and a controller, right, and a different way of consuming the game. But on the same time, if we think about just the game mechanics and how the game works, this is a perfect example of somewhere that, or a type of game that can actually carry progress across those screens. There is no reason why I couldn't start to play a game on my phone and then continue playing it on a console and vice versa. So this is kind of one of those core scenarios that it's like, yeah, you know what, it's like, obviously it's table stakes. We have to make sure that those things are dead simple, that every game can take advantage of it with very, very little effort. And we put a lot of time kind of implementing that platform that, that John is going to talk about in a second, and how do we kind of make that available to you as developers. Next is the multiplayer. And multiplayer, it's like, yes, well, of course, we've been doing multiplayer for years, right? And we started by doing multiplayer by carrying over our PCs to our friend's house and doing LAN parties. And, you know, if for those of you who still remember those days. And later, we actually implemented real multiplayer. It was the same screen multiplayer, but I could play against other people that use the same platform. Yes, I had to go and find the right IP and type it in the right place, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, but we can actually do over-the-network multiplayer. And we got better at it, and I think that today we're at the point where multiplayer for across, whether it's our PC titles or phone titles, or especially console titles, are like, you know, it's like bread and butter. It's like air. It's just there. It's super easy to implement, super easy to use. But now we're starting to think about, so what does it mean when I actually want to do it cross-screen? I mean, does it even make sense? And if it does, then to what type of games it makes sense? And this is where we were kind of spending a lot of time thinking, so what is the right way to build such experiences? And how do we really make that available for developers in a way that makes sense? And eventually, we decided to provide the core functions of the platform, such as matchmaking or session management or some of the more core functionality, and really leave the freedom to when to use it or how to use it to the developer. At the end of the day, it's all about the type of games that you play, whether or not that game or specific game design actually makes sense for a multiplayer functionality. And does it even work cross screens or not? Some games will never work cross screen. I'd never see myself play a first-person shooter on a console against someone on a PC, right? It's different input controls, it's different mechanics, different graphics. There's certain things that just won't work for all game types, right? So, but we wanted to make sure that all the affordances to actually build such experiences are there, right? And they work across screens. And last year in Build was the first time that we announced that we are bringing our async multiplayer platform to all of our screens. And it's there, and we actually have games on Windows 8 that are already taking advantage of it. Some of them are already in the store and you can use, and a couple more we're going to demo in a second and show you really how they make use of all of those type of services and technologies to implement such experiences. Companion games. Companion games, it's an interesting topic. I think that this is one of those areas that a lot of the game companies are still, or any development companies are still experimenting in. There is no clear, I think, winner or experience that I can point at and says, this is how a second screen experience should be implemented in. We just don't know. There's a lot of experimentation in this space. I personally like what Call of Duty done with Call of Duty Elite. I think it's a really nice implementation of there is a main franchise, but there is a second screen experience, right? In Call of Duty Elite, it's a website or an app that I can actually immerse myself in even when I'm not in front of my TV playing the game. Right, and for a lot of people, that's really what matters, right? Because I care about that franchise. I'm going to go home and I'm going to sit in front of the TV, and I'm going to do multiplayer and consume my first-person shooter experience. But when I'm not at home, I still care about that franchise. I want to get better, so I can go and configure my my load, and I can learn the multiplayer maps and how they look like. But this is a second screen experience, right? And this is how Activision chose to implement it, right? I think that the same BioWare did with Mass Effect 3. They had like a datapad app that you can actually contribute to the progress of the game. I can go and improve my war readiness, right, score by playing on the iPad. Yeah, it was not a great experience or implementation, but a lot of people, and we see the same for Skyrim, and we see the same for a lot of other titles. So I think that a lot of, I'll take questions at the end. I think that a lot of companies are still trying to experiment and understand what does it mean to create second screen experience. And again, what we wanted to do with our platform is to create the affordances for user developers to create those experiences. We're not going to dictate on how exactly we expect you to build it or in what shell it's going to run or what Chrome is going to be around it. It's all about creating the affordances and the right tools for developers to build it. Another example that we have here, and I gave it before, is like Fable 3 and Fable Golf. This is one type. We have toy soldiers on the different screen that allow you that. So again, this is that type of experience that I can play each game separately. It's going to run great, but they work better together. The last one that I mentioned is Smart Glass, and this is one of those things that we really put a lot of focus as a platform on providing the right tools and experiences to create great augmented experience. So unlike the companion games, Smart Glass experience don't make any sense unless they're tied to the console or to the big screen, right? So I'm consuming the experience on the big screen, and then there is some other experience on my second screen, whether it's on a slate or a phone or iPad or whatever, that makes that experience better. So for example, the Smart Glass experience we built for our Xbox video app is I can watch a movie, and in any point of time, I have an experience that tells me which actors are on screen, right? And that I see what they're wearing, and I can navigate to specific scenes in the movie. It just makes the experience better. I can't consume it all by itself, but if I'm watching a movie, I have something that can make my experience better. Same for games, right? Forza implemented, you know, a moving map. I see where I am at any time when I'm driving the car, right? Dance Central 3, so you can choose your next song without standing in front of the Kinect and, you know, and trying to navigate menus. I actually have something that it's much easier to navigate with, right? So there are different types of second screen experiences and Smart Glass experience, and really what we provided here as Microsoft is the platform, the tools, the APIs, and the consumption experience in this case. There is a talk later this week about how do you build Smart Glass experience. I recommend that you go. It's a super interesting talk. So that kind of summarizes the four key scenarios that we're focusing on when we talk about what is cross-screen gaming, right? It's about play, pause, resume. It should be dead simple. It should just be there, right? And for most of the games that you can get that are Xbox Live games on Windows 8, they all implement that, right? I can start playing on one screen, continue on another screen, and magically it just works. Same for the async multiplayer platform, the companion game platform, as well as for Smart Glass. So to demo you some of the great stuff that we've done, we actually have one of our great partners from Arcadium, Martin Engblom. I'll ask him to join us to the stage. Martin is... I'll let him actually introduce myself. He's our great partners, and they've built some of the games that you all love, which are Solitaire, Minesweeper, and some of the games that we have in Windows 8. And I asked them to join us today because they were the first one on our platform. They're like the bleeding edge. You can still see it dripping from him there. And I wanted to kind of have him first demo some of the great games and then talk about the experience that they had with our platform. So go for it.
All right. Thank you, Avi. Let's see. My name is, like Avi said, Morten Engblom. I'm VP of Engineering at Arcadium. We've been building casual, social, and mobile games for over 10 years. We are based in New York. We have three offices around the world. We've been working with Microsoft for a number of years in a number of different ways. We've had many successful titles at MSN Zone, for example. And over the last year and a half or so, we've been working with game studios and Xbox Live to bring four fresh titles to the App Store on the very day it launched. And like we was mentioning, these are Microsoft Solitaire, Minesweeper, Mahjong, sort of fresh remakes of those classic titles, those classics reimagined, if you will. And then there's a fourth title that's a brand new game mechanic that's completely optimized for touch, and it's called Taptiles. In all four of these titles, we use Xbox Live services pretty heavily. We implement leaderboards in the way you would expect it, right? In every title and in every game mode, there's a number of different leaderboards to track not just top high score, but also sort of longest winning streaks and all kinds of interesting stuff. We use achievements in a way that's familiar to anyone who plays games on the console. It is pretty cool to be able to turn on your 360 when you get home and see the achievements that you unlocked on the train on the way home, playing solitaire or whatever. It's pretty sweet. Probably the most important service we use is title managed storage. We use the title-specific TMS for a number of things. We push content, daily challenges, and things like that. We push settings and configuration values, anything from like ad frequencies to difficulty settings or what have you. We push some visual content also, theme, background themes, and that kind of stuff. And then for the user-specific TMS, we use it for to store user settings, like volume settings and stuff like that. We store progression, the badges you've earned, and so forth. We store statistics that we sort of merge across. If you play the game on multiple devices, you get sort of a cumulative stats of how many games you played, your winning percentage, and stuff like that. And probably most the most exciting feature is the play, pause, resume, like Avi was mentioning. We use the user-specific TMS for that. So when you you play a game on a device, it constantly syncs to the cloud, and when you pick up the same title on a different device, it's again it's like magic. You continue where you were, and that solitaire Klondike deck that you almost finished on the way home, right on the bus, now you can complete it on your laptop at home. Or maybe on your PC in the office the next day, right? Shh, don't tell anyone about that. Okay, so with that in mind, we're gonna jump to a little demo here and just see how it works. So we're gonna start on number three, right? Yeah. So here is Minesweeper, one of these titles I was mentioning. There's a couple of these things I mentioned here. There are leaderboards, there are statistics, awards and badges you've earned, and so forth, right? So I'm going to go in here, and there's one of these large boards I just started a couple of minutes ago. I'm going to make some moves here. Hopefully I won't blow it up, so I okay, this is got a chance here. Oh, well, there you go. So I'll start over again. This makes for a better demo, right? All right. Better luck next time. We'll try it again. So, new game. All right. So now, you know, let's say I'm almost finished. I get home. I drop my, my slate's turned off. I sit down at my PC. For the purpose of this demo, we're using two slates, but nevertheless, it's two different devices. So I'm going to ask you to switch to number one. All right, so let's see. We're gonna go.
So,
here.
Martin, just a question. So, you guys are also working on the same titles on the phone and other form factors.
Yeah, right. That's correct. So eventually we'll be able to do this demo with actually two different
phone, Windows Phone and console. Exactly. Yeah. So for the purpose of the demo, we're using two Windows 8 machines, but it works across any type of device that supports our Xbox Live services.
That's correct. And it's all through the same same SDK and same API that Avi and his team provides for us. Yep.
I think that you brought up an interesting point, which is the same SDK. One of the another investment that we're making and putting a lot of focus on is making sure that the same API, the same SDK, the same behavior that developers get on Windows 8 also work on Windows Phone 8 and later on the console as well. So it's going to be super important when you think about how do I take my game from one platform to the other and really making that as seamless as possible to developers.
Yeah, and it's been really great for us to work with these services that Avi and his team provides. They worry about scalability on the back end for hundreds of millions of users, and we can focus on this, right? Making great gameplay experiences, and we don't have to sort of sweat bullets over, you know, when the game gets distributed over all these hundreds of millions of PCs. All right, so I'm on my second device here. I'm gonna go to the same game type. It's the large board, and it just says, you know, there's a cloud. There's a game in the cloud. Do you want to use that one, or do you want to use the one that's in progress locally? I'm gonna say cloud, and hopefully it should look the same as I left it on the other device. And there it is, right? So, yeah, it works. Like magic. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you, Martin. So for the second half of the session, we're going to go to the details and of the implementation. I'm going to have John Bruno, my counterpart in crime, is going to tell you about how it actually works behind the scenes.
Thanks, Avi. Good afternoon. How's everybody doing? It's the end of the day. We're all tired, right? Kind of getting bleary-eyed. But guess what? There's goodies at the end of the session, right? Everyone's excited about that. No. I'm sure it will be expedient. I know everyone does their amazing work to try to make this a great experience for you guys. So enjoy the goodies. I'm going to claim ignorance on that one. So my name is John Bruno. I'm a lead program manager over the Xbox Live service. And as Avi and Martin kind of discussed earlier, we provide a lot of the backing services for the APIs and the games that that are built on Win8. So real quick, before I dig in sort of into the sausage factory and show you guys what sort of some of the main functionality we have back there is, quick show of hands, what is what everyone's role in their respective jobs? How many game code developers do we have, like people writing code on a regular basis versus producers? People who are thinking about designers? Anyone who doesn't write a game? Sweet, we've got new people, all right. Okay, so one of the things that the guys alluded to is the fact that Xbox Live is really about a cross-screen service. Several years ago, we started to move towards this idea of, hey, we're available on any screen. We started as a console-based service way back in the 2004 timeframe when services were sort of just a glimmer in people's eyes on the internet. We supported the console. It was our primary responsibility. But as devices and gaming became more prevalent on other devices, we started to expand the service. And now we're actually a fully REST-based cross-screen service where essentially we deliver HTTP and JSON to every device in a very consistent way. So I'll spare you the gratuitous animations. Avi talked earlier about the four big scenarios that we target for cross-screen game development. And during that conversation, he alluded to a number of different things that we provide from a platform perspective that are sort of the enablers of those cross-screen the cross-screen game functionality. The next several slides, we're going to kind of walk through each of these things, and I'll explain to you like how do we make all this stuff happen. And you can think about how you could apply these in your cross-screen games. So we'll start with things like title groups and title managed storage. You heard Martin sort of allude to what they've done with title managed storage and some of the power you can apply there. We'll also talk about our near real-time matchmaking cross-screen multiplayer and our leaderboard service as well as achievements, which I'm sure folks are all very familiar with if you've played Xbox games at all. Let's start with title groups. So one of the things that we found early on when we started doing this cross-screen game platform was hey, you know, titles are sort of discrete on each platform. So you have, like, Avi had an example earlier. We talked about Plants vs. Zombies on the console versus that on a Windows 8 device or even a phone. They're being very discrete entities, things that don't normally communicate with each other or actually even necessarily have knowledge of one another. So we needed to bridge that gap. So title groups became sort of the canonical plumbing that we needed on the platform to actually make those games talk to each other. So primary function of title groups is to enable sharing across titles and screens. They're essentially a first-class construct in our APIs, very much the same way our title IDs are first-class concepts. For folks who are familiar with Win8 development, the example I would use is, like, say, an application ID, the identifier that sort of, you know, identifies your game, if you will, in the system. We have an identifier above that, which is the title group, which provides more of an aggregate. Title groups actually manifest shared title storage. So essentially what happens is we take title groups and we can apply storage at a title group level and allow multiple titles beneath it to share in that storage experience. And on top of that, we provide an access control list mechanism, which allows you to sort of establish these cross-screen relationships with data sharing. Let's take a look at an example of how this would actually work inside of a title. So in my example, I use Connectimals, because we actually did this with Connectimals on Windows Phone. And essentially, if you think about Connectimals, they want to launch and use title groups to actually store data for their game saves. But they want to do this on the console, and they want to do this, you know, on the phone. They actually, the feature that they have in that title is what we commonly refer to as the kitty in the cloud. So we can take my animal, I can customize my animal, I can, you know, do so on my phone, save them to the cloud, pull them back up on the console, my kids can play with their kitty across the different devices. So Connectimals for Windows Phone, they want to release and they want to provide that read-write access to the Connectimals title group so that the cubs can be essentially be shared across those devices. So Connectimals Mobile shows up, you have Connectimals Console, you create the ACL between the two, and now you can share data. Now, along comes Connectimals 2. A year later, now with Bears, right? So not only do I want to have Bears in Connectimals 2, but I actually want to go and pull all of my, you know, custom animals from Connectimals 1. Again, title groups allow us to create that relationship between those titles and actually import that saved game into the new title. So what you have is not just a cross-device sharing between titles of a similar version, but actually you can go forward versions and pull data in from older titles. Might be cool when Martin and company deliver Minesweeper 2, right? You can import all of my history. So below title groups is what we have for our storage mechanism. It's what we refer to as Title Managed Storage, or TMS. TMS is effectively the canonical example of our blob store. This is how we allow titles to read and write data into our cloud. TMS provides data sharing across titles and devices, as I mentioned. It also enables things like the game configuration management. I believe Martin used that as an example of how they manage some of the titles like Solitaire by storing game configs and downloading those at start time. Some of the key things that we've done with Title Managed Storage, we create effectively a partition for global data and user data, and we support multiple types of blobs. We support a binary, a JSON, and a game configuration blob, and I'll kind of walk through the difference between all those three. And we've recently added support within Title Managed Storage to store user-generated content in the form of photos. So for folks who actually have done this before in, say, the web world or other places where allowing users to push content of their own generation into a cloud store, you'll know that safety is a real issue, and we want to try to protect our users and make sure that the things that they see in their experience is going to be as safe and protected as possible. So we provide this photo scanning on top of the Title Managed Storage so that we can prevent any sort of, you know, lewd and lascivious kind of imagery showing up when you don't want your kids to see that. So TMS has a couple of supported blob types. We started to talk about this, but let's go kind of drill in a little bit. Binary blobs is the one that we've had for a long time on 360. So we carried that forward with Win 8 Win Phone. Essentially, what that allows you to do is store any sort of binary opaque data. If I want to create a .foo file or any sort of file that is just opaque and binary to us, it allows you to store that data arbitrarily. It's very similar to our classic game save infrastructure. It's good for images, good for videos, but it's actually not great for sharing, and I'll tell you why. In the Xbox world, we have what's considered verified and unverified platforms, which to us means that you have some platforms that we can trust at a higher level than platforms you can't trust. And so what we need to be able to prevent is the ability for a lesser trusted platform to affect a higher trusted platform. And as you can imagine, binary, injecting things into binary and then pushing those down to a super secure 360 is not something we want to actually proliferate. So we do have some precautionary measures in place to prevent that. That said, we created smart blobs to sort of handle some of those challenges of being able to share between verified and unverified platforms. So smart blobs allow you to the same basic read-write APIs as a binary blob does, but we support both JSON types and game configuration types. And for a JSON type, imagine we're just basically taking a JSON document, storing that into a blob store, but we're actually doing some type checking on it to make sure that it isn't going to be corrupted by an unverified platform. The other thing that's actually quite interesting about how we do the JSON is that we, in our REST API, will actually allow you to not only put or get a JSON document, but we'll actually let you get a specific attribute of that JSON document, which our API does sort of the server-side processing for you on that. And game configuration, very similar to a JSON document, is that it's kind of a structure that we understand, and we can do some parsing on that and make sure it's valid. As I mentioned, with smart blobs, you can share data between verified and unverified platforms. Basically, with title group ACLs, you can restrict read and write at any level in the tree that you support. So we actually have a tool that lets you go into a portal, upload some files, set some ACLs on the actual directories, and then be able to pull those files down. So here's a quick example of what TMS looks like. What we have is your basic storage boundary, which includes both your global title storage and your storage for each individual user within the title. You can think of the global title store as the area that can be shared across multiple titles in the title group. So think of this as the place where you would store your configuration data, the global data that you want to be accessible to all your titles, like say your daily challenges and things like that. For those, you can do a get, put, or delete if you want to hit the REST endpoints directly, or you can use the actual Windows APIs that are provided by the SDK. And in addition to the global storage, what you have is per user storage for that title. So back to the example of Minesweeper, every user that has Minesweeper actually gets a chunk of storage, 250 megs to be exact. Just like the Minesweeper title itself gets 150 megs of global storage, what they can use to store global data. So that means for most games, you get a fairly big chunk of storage for every user to persist things like game saves, persist things like content that was generated by the game or stats or things of that nature. You couple that with the sharing relationships that you get across devices, you've got a pretty powerful storage mechanism behind you. And all of that is obviously backed by Xbox Live Scale and managed completely by you, the title developer. Beyond storage, we provide, as Avi mentioned, a multiplayer matchmaking service as well. It is not a traditional multiplayer service in that it's not peer-to-peer. It is actually more of an asynchronous multiplayer service. It's the two primitives that we really provide are around session storage and matchmaking. So we can obviously enable users to play together even when they're not online. That's sort of the power of async. If we're online and we can play together, we get a fairly rich experience, fairly near real time. But if one of us, we're on a bus and going to a tunnel, connection drops, I can keep playing, and when I come back online, the session data will synchronize. It's a complete service solution for basically enabling the gameplay across screen like we've talked about. It allows you to take a session document, store that in the cloud, share it across the different screens, and effectively allow users to play together across devices. I mentioned that it's near real time, but it also allows you to gracefully degrade into an asynchronous mode if, for example, you drop a connection or something along those lines. And there's a number of possibilities for in terms of title implementation. We've seen everything from, I think it's Reckless Racing was the one that is most recently doing that. We've seen things even as simple as blackjack and other types of card games. So with matchmaking, I started to allude to some of these components that we've got and that are related to the multiplayer matchmaking overall. The obvious one is matchmaking, right? The service that's available to help you find players to play with and join the game. What matchmaking lets you do is say, hey, this is how I want to play. Find me people who want to play like that. Allows you the title to sort of advertise the types of sessions that you might have available. And also allows the users to say, hey, I want a session of this particular type. Help me find other people like this. We provide that custom criteria in the API so that you can actually specify, hey, I want to match on this particular mode, or allow titles to actually match across the different screens. So with this one, which is actually another pretty cool service, is it gives you the ability to say, hey, I can play against from a Windows 8 device to a Windows phone with relative ease. I can take the population of both device users and actually match them together, which actually the folks who have tried to do matchmaking in the past, you'll know that population really matters quite a bit for getting a good match. And then I mentioned the multiplayer session management. That's the second service in the collection of multiplayer match services. That's the one that allows you to do the creator join session, allows you to store your game state in the cloud, and actually persist that game state across connected or disconnected sessions. And the third component is messaging. As I was kind of mentioning earlier, the fact that you are connected and playing a multiplayer game on a mobile device may not always be true, right? One user may disconnect, the gameplay may have to degrade into an asynchronous mode. Messaging allows the game developer to say, hey, it's your turn. Hey, you've dropped off. It's your turn to make a move here. And so, conversely, you can actually invite users to games or do things like send messages or other types of notifications to users during gameplay. A typical matchmaking example, again I'm using some REST examples here, but these could be absolutely doable via the Windows APIs. You essentially submit a match request up to the multiplayer and match servers. And then what will happen is as that match is being searched for, you'll continue to poll the service, throw an async handler onto your code there and wait for a callback. You send up the match criteria, we return you a match found or no match found. It's a pretty simple service, actually. So, talked about title groups, talked about storage, as well as matchmaking and multiplayer, but what game would be complete without leaderboards? I'm sure folks who've been playing arcade games know leaderboards is probably one of the oldest features in gameplay. Anyone who's spent enough time feeding quarters into a machine like I have knows what the three most favorite letters to write into the leaderboards are. But essentially, we wouldn't be a complete solution if we didn't have leaderboard service. We support both this idea of a discrete leaderboard per screen, so that if your game on Windows 8 would like to have its own leaderboard versus your game on a Windows phone saying having a separate leaderboard, we can support that, as well as this idea of shared leaderboards across multiple screens. With leaderboards, it really varies. The gameplay needs really vary, I should say, in terms of leaderboards. So some games may not make sense to compete with each other across the different devices. So showing an interleaved leaderboard of Windows Phone and Windows 8 type of gameplay may not make sense. So that's why we continue to support the discrete leaderboards versus the shared. It really comes down to a decision that you guys have to make when you build your title. Same with achievements, really. Achievements remain discrete on each title. When I provision a set of achievements for Connectimals, that's a block of achievements that I can award for that particular title. I can do that on a Windows device. I can do that on a console. We allow you to query progression across those different titles, but we don't actually support this idea of shared achievements across two titles. So I can't actually provision a block of achievements that are awarded on multiple titles. But what I can do is I can use achievements to promote cross-device gameplay. So in other words, like, hey, you've played Plants vs. Zombies on Xbox Live Arcade. I see you've just started playing on Windows 8. Here's an achievement for you. So with any of these services and any of these experiences, there comes a set of best practices. Now, to be honest, this is an evolving list, right? We've been doing this for about a year or so now. We're starting to see the fruits of our labor and the fruits of your labor come to pass. We're learning more and more as we go in terms of what we think are best practices. But one thing we could probably all agree on is designing for a screen optimal experience is kind of the way to go, right? You want to take advantage of the real estate you have on each device, take advantage of the edge compute you have on each device. But obviously, where you can inject things that make sense cross-device, do it. But when you do that, when you build a cross-device game, you also want to really consider how you think about data sharing. Martin gave us some great examples of how they're doing data sharing across their games. But your game may be totally different. Your game may involve some sort of a persistent world state, or something that's going to be somewhat unique to your gameplay. So when you sit down and actually think about this, think long and hard about your data sharing, how you want to set your ACLs up and share that across different screens. For multiplayer, I mentioned this earlier, to the extent you can match across devices, use Windows 8, use Windows Phone, get the biggest pool, that's going to get you the best matches. And achievements are a great way to drive cross-title purchase and gameplay. So if you know somebody's got the game on Windows Phone and you want to entice them to get it on Windows 8, during the trial on Windows 8, maybe you're going to help upsell them a little bit. One thing we always talk about in Xbox Live Land is the policies and TCRs of using our services and using our APIs. The spirit of our policies and TCRs is one where we really want to provide the best experience for users. We want Xbox Live to be a place where users understand the quality level of games that they're getting. They understand that they're going to have great experiences. And so a lot of the things that we ask developers to do from a requirements around policies and TCRs are sort of rooted in that belief. We publish changes to these all the time at developer.xboxlive.com. They usually correspond with an update to the SDK. And essentially, I think that borders on monthly now, something along those lines. I would encourage you to review them if you're going to be building games. I'd encourage that to be done as far in advance of actually writing code as possible, so you sort of know what the guidelines are. Okay, so to briefly recap what we've talked about today, Avi gave us a great overview of some of the cross-screen scenarios that we really think are awesome for Xbox Live and Windows 8. We recognize that entertainment experiences are evolving across devices. This is a big bet for us and Microsoft. And of course, we as Xbox Live want to provide services that enable those sort of engaging cross-screen experiences. We're hoping that this talk really inspires you guys to start to incorporate some of these best practices in your game design, start to think about taking your game designs to multiple screens. And of course, don't waste any time. You're going to get a brand new Surface and phone in the next 20 minutes. So let's start coding tonight. So grab the SDK and have a little fun. Now, I know you guys are all probably asking yourselves this question. Okay, this sounds great, guys, but what is the trick to becoming an Xbox Live publisher? There is a fairly detailed process of becoming an Xbox Live publisher. It all starts with you guys submitting your concepts and starting to tell us what you're thinking about in terms of gameplay. From there, that concept goes into review, and people on the Microsoft side actually look at the IP and think about what it is that you're going to be bringing to market. That goes through another step of production review, which ultimately leads to further investigation, but ultimately, you know, brings more of you guys into the fold. And that's really the goal, right? The goal is to open up as much as we possibly can, bring quality IP into Xbox Live, give you guys the opportunity to really start to, you know, push your games into a broad audience and capture sort of some of the awesomeness of Xbox Live into your games. There's some email addresses up there. Those are the folks that you would contact for additional information if you want to do Windows Phone, Windows 8, Xbox Live, the arcade rather. That's how you get started. And obviously, if you have questions or any of those types of things, come chat with Avi and I after, and we'll give you more details. With that, I'd like to take about 10 minutes or so and get any of your questions out on the table. Hopefully have a good discussion. Before we do that, though, I'd want to remind you that evals, super important. You know, in fact, I think Avi might get fired if he doesn't get a good eval. So please, you know, give him at least some feedback so his boss doesn't get upset. Don't forget, downstairs, 7 o'clock, collecting the goodies. You don't have to go all the way to Building 33. You know, all that will happen here. So with that, feel free to grab a microphone, step up, ask us questions. You know, nothing's off limits here.
Zero.
Okay.
Yes. That was an easy one. That was an easy one.
Right. Sure. The question was how much the certification cost, and the answer was time. And there's no financial cost for it.
First question was one to verify that there's zero connection with cross-device achievements to include like RT and Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, and Xbox.
Yeah, so let me paraphrase your question. You're really asking, is there a connection between for achievements between
any of those
phones? any of those screens? At a basic level, achievements are discrete across different titles. That said, there is a way to query and pull achievement progress together through the API, but there's no sort of shared achievements between titles.
Yeah, but one quick addition, but between Windows 8, the RT version, and Pro, it's pretty much the same title.
That's right.
So in that case, it's the same title, same progress, same achievements. The discrete titles come into fruition when we talk about phone, PC, and console. Right, which are basically three different titles.
Thank you. And the next one was, I wanted to verify that you can pay once and download on the different classes of devices. So is it possible for RT and 8 to pay once and download on both?
So, great question. So between Windows 8 RT and Windows 8 Pro, it's the same purchase. Basically, purchase it from Windows Store, and you can download it on any of your devices, right? Sorry, up to 5 devices. That's a Windows Store policy. It's not Windows. It's not Xbox Live specific. This is true for any app in the Windows Store. But when it gets across marketplaces, for example, the Xbox Marketplace, Windows Store Marketplace, and Windows Phone Marketplace, we currently do not support the notion of being buy once, play anywhere.
Thanks. And the last question was, when you're playing on two different consoles right now, or when you're playing up in your bedroom on one console, your wife goes downstairs, turns on the other console, you get logged off the first, and start up on the second.
Yes, right.
Is there a way to prevent access, for example, to your kitty in the cloud by two devices at the same time so that you can prevent some kind of issue like that?
Sure. I think I understand your question. I think what you're asking is basically if you're sharing accounts across two different devices, like can one screw up the other one,
yes,
potentially? The short answer is yes. The data is ACLed first by title, partitioned first by title, then by user. So to the extent you're talking about the same user, as far as the cloud looks, it just looks like the same user on a different device. So I'd probably encourage more of a different account on that other device if possible.
Okay, well, particularly so in the kitty example, if you have it on your Windows Phone, and you also have it on your Slate, and you also have it on your Xbox, your kid's playing on one, and for whatever reason you're playing on the other, you both can screw up the one that's on the Xbox. That's correct?
Not screw up per se, but you would basically be sharing the same data.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that to add to that, you will as a game developer need to manage the merging of the data.
That's
right.
You
need to make sure that it's in a way that your game logic supports, right? So Martin and I can play Minesweeper in two different machines in the same time, but Minesweeper needs to decide, so which data I upload to the cloud,
that's right?
How do I do basically conflict resolution? Now, the other part of the question was about the sign in, sign out, and just a single user signed in. That's true only in the Xbox world, in Xbox 360 world, sorry, where you can be signed in only from one console at a time. On Windows Phone and Windows 8, you can be signed in on multiple devices at the same time and we won't kick you out. This is something that the older Game for Windows Live platform basically didn't support, and it was working exactly the same as the consoles. If you're signed in on one PC, we would sign you out from the other platform, whether it's a PC or the console. And with Windows 8, we changed it. As we moved to the new REST service APIs that are designed for bigger, for higher scale and concurrency, yep. We also moved to the model where you can be signed in on multiple devices at the same time and won't kick you out.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Sir, in the back.
With respect to becoming an Xbox Live publisher, is it true then that a small independent developer can become an Xbox Live publisher and not have to be published through Microsoft Studios and have access to these APIs without having to be published by Microsoft?
You want to take it? You want me to take it?
You said no rules, right?
No, that's fine. This is
more than I have.
Yeah,
so,
this is one of the harder questions because as Microsoft, we are trying to do whatever we can to open Xbox Live to Windows 8 development. We understand that Windows 8, developer volume, app volume is completely different than the 360 volume, and we're doing the best we can to enable that. The first step that we're taking is, as John showed you, is like, you still have to go through this initial submission process. At the end of the day, the publisher that's going to be kind of working with you through that process is the Microsoft Studios, but it's going to be more as just kind of just as an escort, make sure that you get all the services that you need, make sure that you get all the help that you need from the product groups, the marketing groups, and a collaboration with Windows Store. But I wouldn't call it a publisher per se. It's more of a kind of lightweight publisher type agreement. But you still need to work through a publisher in this case.
Yeah, I mean, one, not to put Martin on the spot, but basically Microsoft's Game Studios published the Inbox games, right? So, you know, that was, I'm sure Martin could share some experience there, how that went for him.
Say only good things.
we can talk. You come see me after the session.
Oh, that doesn't sound good, Martin.
No.
I'm kidding.
Okay. But the quick answer is that no, we currently don't support kind of a completely free model where you can just go and develop
right.
Xbox Live.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there any access to any of these APIs without being an Xbox Live publisher? Like, can I use any of the things that you talked about in this talk without somehow being approved to use them?
There is not. No.
Okay. Just as a quick comment, the reason why I'm concerned about all of that is because you describe a lightweight publishing scenario, but that lightweight publishing assistance may also include some cut of the percentage that the developer gets, and that's a concern for us.
Yeah, it's a completely valid concern. It's one that I will claim lack of deep knowledge on from a business perspective, but that's definitely good feedback. Thank you. Sir, you had a question? So same question about free access for achievements. Thanks.
Okay. So thank you very much. Go get your goodies.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a pleasure.